Certainly, as Tessa took a seat in business class, she looked very much at home. Even the flight attendants fussed around her. Sod her, Bex thought. This morning she was all wily and streetwise, while this afternoon she'd got that most elusive quality, old style. Makes you sick. It was already getting dark by the time they reached Brussels, and black night with a hint of rain when they landed at Bern, home of Einstein, Clay, the Bears, and that bloody clock tower, Bex thought as she moved quickly, leaving the aircraft well before Tess. She lingered on the jetway, bending over to examine a non-existent problem with her right shoe, until Tessa Murray passed by, not even slowing as she headed along the corridor. Good strides and the confidence of a much younger woman. Tessa travelled light, as she always did when visiting Ronnie. The overnight bag only held essentials, for she had a full wardrobe at the Villa Mirt, which had long been a second home on the lakefront. From Brissago's ferry dock, you walked in the direction of Italy, up the main road for almost a kilometre. The villa was on the left, with its red tiled roof and the balustraded balcony that ran the length of the ground floor looking out across Lake Maggiore at the curve of the mountains on the far side. Next to Richardson's Paris apartment, the villa on Maggiore was Tessa's favourite place in the world, and she would have liked to be able to get on to Locarno and thence Brissago that night. But it was late when they got to Bern, and she knew from experience that it was always better to break the journey. "I'd rather have you here refreshed and a day late than have you jumpy and tired after the long haul from the Bern Bears," Ronnie once told her during the first months when she was establishing a pattern of visiting her brother. She went through passport control, smiling at the Dour officer who did his little conjurer's move, flipping the document open, glancing up for the reality check with the photograph. As she walked across the concourse and out into the damp night, Tessa recognised several people who had been on the flight from Dublin and Brussels. A pair of businessmen, a middle-aged couple who could have been illicit lovers, if there were such things these days. And the 30-something woman in sensible shoes, well-cut raincoat, and a Hermes scarf tied loosely at her throat. There was also a tall, slim, once-attractive man, airline pilot, captain, his raincoat slung open around his shoulders, navy blue uniform crumpled, cap at a studied angle, and a well-worn and scuffed black leather overnight case bulging in his hand. In recent years, Richardson had taught Tessa Murray how to sort professional hunters from the innocents, so she could alert herself to possible danger at least 80% of the time. In Dublin, as she arrived late for the flight, she'd spotted the surveillance team and a lone Garda plainclothes cop. Now, as more people came out of the arrivals and baggage halls, she extended her mental antennae and with studied care made a visual sweep of her immediate surroundings. Two uniformed policemen sporting automatic weapons were just inside the terminal. Outside, a lone, officious-looking cop kept the peace with an evil eye and strong body language. The businessmen were away quickly by cab. The middle-aged lovers, the man looked jumpy, she thought, hesitated as though they were not sure if they could afford the luxury of a taxi. The woman in a raincoat was definitely ambivalent, unable to make a decision, going to a taxi and speaking with the driver. Tessa looked up toward the airport bus stop, where a young couple and three more solitaries, two men and a woman, had joined the waiting line. She didn't even notice where the tall one wearing the cloth cap had gone, but he had disappeared, and this last fact left-footed Tess, who liked to keep tabs on everyone travelling around her. She stood back just as another clot of passengers came out onto the pavement. Three couples, one of them with children, the woman carrying a baby. "Make certain it really is a live child," Ronnie usually counseled. "It's good technique to be carrying a child." Two more women, and a young man dressed formally in a suit with a tailored topcoat trimmed with a small brown velvet collar. His shoes shone like mirrors, and he looked out of place, like someone inappropriately dressed at a party. But he did not trigger any of Tessa's alarms. For some reason, though, she had become jumpy after realizing that slim, flat cap had vanished. "Maybe?" she queried. She hesitated, then strolled over to join the growing queue for the airport bus. If she became alarmed, she could always change her mind and take a cab at the last minute. By the time the bus arrived, she'd recognized a handful of her fellow passengers from the flight from Brussels, including the woman in the raincoat. Nothing suspicious, except for the missing cloth cap and blazered man with the lived-in face. The driver had now arrived, as humorless as the passport control officer. She paid her fare and took a seat toward the back of the bus. There was a small problem with the raincoat and ailmaid girl, who seemed to be having language difficulties. "He wants to know if you have other luggage," she called out. The driver was being unusually obstinate for a Swiss. More often than not, they liked to speak their fluent, faultless English, but not this one, who addressed everyone in thick, sing-song Schweizerdeutsch, asking about luggage as they proffered their fare. When they were all on board, the driver climbed out and loaded the baggage into the compartment behind the rear seats, making a song and dance of it. The rain became heavy as they set off, and a lot of early evening traffic was on the roads. Through the wet, dotted windows, the lights became starbursts, and the driver handled the vehicle with exaggerated care. Tess thought he was a real pain, an attention-seeker, determined to make heavy weather of everything. You could almost hear him sighing in unison with the windshield wipers, and somehow this seemed to make the short journey more arduous. Half an hour later they reached the Bahnhofplatz, coming to a halt outside the information office that was firmly shut against the night. The couple with children alighted and were greeted noisily by relatives, a man and a woman who looked like models for Tweedledum and Tweedledee, short, fat, with red aggressive faces. Tessa hefted her overnight case, climbed out, and quickly sought the comparative shelter of the arcade of shops and offices, crossing the road on the corner of Spitalgasse, opposite the somewhat straight-laced and forbidding Church of the Holy Trinity. She was vaguely aware of other people behind her as she went through the doors of the little guest house she always used when passing through Bern. Early in their relationship, Ronnie advised her to use small, unobtrusive hotels and guest houses. "Stay away from luxury in continental Europe," he said. "It's very difficult to get lost in a 6-star hotel. In America it's easy, and in England also. Unless you're very well known to the executive management, they don't even recognize you. But on the continent it's different. They're more of a history of secret policemen. In most countries they still check and look at the guest lists of big hotels. So much for the EU. In Switzerland, always stay down, never go the luxe route." She smiled at the girl behind the cubbyhole of the reception desk who knew her, but could never remember her name. The girl smiled back and said, "Ah, Frau," past friend, she thought as she gave her name. "Nicholas," she told the girl, taking the little registration slip and writing, "Thomasina Nicholas, passport number, da-da-da." Between leaving the aircraft and walking into the hotel, Tessa had done a quick change. All her documents now showed her as T. Nicholas. Even her luggage tags were changed, quickly slipped off and on during the walk from the baggage hall to the bus. "I can still get dinner." "Yes, yes, of course. We don't start serving for 15 minutes. Someone came in behind her, but she did not even turn and look. "In the morning, a call at 7, please. I must leave at 8:30 for the train." "As always, Frau Nicholas." Sliding a key across the little counter. "Enjoy your stay with us. Room 21. As Tessa turned toward the little lift, she saw that it was the raincoat and ailmaid girl who was behind her. She smiled and tucked the thought away in her suspicious mind. As for Bex, she asked if they had any rooms for the night. They had, and a few minutes later she was in one. Small, comfortable, and clean, with outrageously heavy furniture and windows overlooking the street. Outside, the rain was starting to ease off, and the road below shone from fractured little bombshell reflections exploding from the black surface. At a distance, about a mile or so away, the sweep of car headlights around some bend dazzled on and off like a flare, while necklaces of lamps swung in the wind and looked like tracers. Far away, a red warning blinked on and off from a high building. There was a sense of World War I déjà vu in what she saw. She looked out on this scene of trench warfare by night, and suddenly her husband Charlie leaped into her mind, a huge widescreen version in glorious Technicolor, with a score by Bruckner and Charlie's voice caressing her thighs.